Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
On Wednesday's show, I spoke to Sophia Murphy, 5 months on after her mother was sentenced to 18 months in prison for child cruelty. The charges against her stemmed from her failure to act to prevent persistent abuse carried out by her husband, John Murphy. He had previously received an 18-year sentence after pleading guilty to indecent and sexual assault.
When it was first mentioned, I didn't really understand what it was, to be honest. Part of me probably was how will I explain it? Part of me was probably happy that I could actually speak to my father, but in a supervised way, you know, that sort of way, without me going for the meeting, because I felt like people would have judged me and stuff like that. And the first time it was very hard for me. I've done it twice. The first time I'd done it, it was very hard. I wasn't long in recovery. I was still very, very vulnerable. But the second time, when I had done a lot of work on myself just before I came over here, and I was like, no, I was ready for him the second time, because I knew the second time that was it, like that was me done, because of all the stuff that had come up and all the stuff that he told me. And it's a powerful space to have. It really is a powerful space to have, but it's hard.
Yeah. That is Sophia Murphy talking to us here on Lunchtime Live this week about the Restorative Justice Programme that she engaged in. It was one of the various, but look, the interview was just absolutely fascinating, talking to Sophia and her recovery and everything she's gone through. And you can listen back if you want in full. That podcast is available. It's on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. But she detailed the Restorative Justice Programme with her father after he'd been sentenced, and she talked about meeting him. She talked about some of the details that she had heard during those interviews. And over the last 2 days, listeners have been getting in touch with us looking to find out more about that restorative justice process. So we said we'd do just that. Dr. Ian Marder, who's an associate professor in criminology at the School of Law and Criminology at Maynooth University, is with me here on the programme today. Ian, you're very welcome to the show. Will you just explain, first of all, how restorative justice works, Ian?
Yes, so Sophia's case that she described there exemplifies it perfectly, because it's a situation where someone who is a victim of crime, and it can be any type of crime from, you know, lower level assaults and burglary and shoplifting all the way through to very, very serious crime, where they have the opportunity to speak or communicate with the person who committed the offense against them. That is something which is entirely voluntary for all parties. It is facilitated by an impartial third party and prepared for in a lot of depth. So, I mean, Sophia talked about the actual meeting she had with her father, but the facilitator would have prepared each of them multiple times over many months before that took place.
So any victim of any crime can choose to engage with the restorative justice process?
Yes. So in principle, yes, restorative justice is potentially suitable for any type of crime. In practice, it can be more difficult for victims of crime in Ireland to access restorative justice, depending on where they are in the country, depending on the sentence of the person. It's not really available for all types of crime at all stages of the crime.
Why is that?
Yeah, so It has not had sufficient investment, and the referral pathways don't always exist. So in a case like Sophia's, for a very serious crime and where the person has been caught and sentenced to a term of imprisonment, or if they are on a community sentence. So those are the two situations where the offender would be what's called known to probation if they're in prison or on a community sentence. A victim of crime can contact the probation service's restorative justice unit, and they can ask the probation service to inquire as to whether restorative justice is possible. But that means that, you know, a lot of crime doesn't end up at that point. So, I mean, there's not necessarily an easy way for someone to access restorative justice in advance of conviction or for other types of crime where perhaps the person doesn't go to prison. So it has expanded somewhat in recent years, but most people don't know about it, and it's not offered, it's not proactively made accessible to people.
Do you know, it was funny, and I know that we're just talking about this today so specifically because of Sophia with us on the programme, but like when people were engaging with us after that, Ian, in the last couple of days, and a lot of people obviously naturally getting in touch to praise Sophia for speaking out and waving her right to anonymity and telling her story so eloquently, but people absolutely fascinated because about the idea of restorative justice, and a lot of listeners not even aware that this was something that existed in Ireland. So is it more common or prevalent in other countries?
It is. There would be countries such as Norway, Finland, Belgium, and other places where it's much more embedded in criminal justice. So that might mean that there's like one national organization that's professionally responsible for delivering restorative justice, or it might mean that there are points in the legal process where a case is automatically referred to be considered. But in the absence of that type of national service that can facilitate any type of case at any point, and also in the absence of a legal requirement to offer it to people to make those assessments, the reality is that, I mean, it's very counterintuitive, not just for, you know, victims of crime, but also professionals. Like, it's kind of the opposite of the way that the legal system works. Mm. The legal system says, you know, once the person once the person's guilt is identified, then the obvious thing to do is keep them totally away from the person and to exclusively focus on their punishment. Whereas what this says is, look, talk to victims, see what their needs are, and explore whether those needs can be met through communication with the offender.
I'm curious, Ian, in order for the restorative justice process to work, does the attacker have to have admitted guilt and own responsibility?
Yes. So in Ireland, that is the case. It's available in cases where a young person has got a caution that then the Garda who is in charge of supervising that young person can offer restorative justice in that case. But the caution has already been decided upon. So the person has already accepted responsibility.
So they have to plead guilty and they have to have been sentenced effectively.
Well, so not necessarily. So also for cases where the offender is an adult, it is possible for it to happen in between conviction and sentencing at the court. So the person would have to have pleaded or been found guilty, but they might not have been sentenced yet. So there is, in addition to the probation service and the guards who offer it in very specific types of cases, there's also a number of probation funded charities that offer restorative justice in different parts of the country. They have the organization is different in different counties, and they would mostly deliver judge referred cases in between conviction and sentencing, mostly for more low level offenses.
I presume both parties have to want to engage with this. You can't be made, I presume, participate.
That's it. Yeah. Informed consent is really, really important, and it's voluntary for both parties, and it's important that people are there for reasons that align with what each of them need from it.
How many people roughly in Ireland would engage with this?
So this is something that is increasingly known about, and there have been some investments in service provision in recent years. For example, probation are training more of their staff to deliver this. But the reality is that the caseloads are very, very low still. So, for example, cases of the kind that Sophia talked about, where the victim and the offender would meet or even communicate indirectly with each other, we track that every year. We've been tracking the number of cases for the last 7 years. Last year, there were only 185 cases where the victim and the offender were facilitated to communicate with each other directly. And that's a direct result of most people not being offered the chance to decide if this is right for them.
It's funny, like when you talk about, I wouldn't have thought that investment would be an issue in this being rolled out. I actually thought it was something that might have been provided by way of the penal system, that this was something that could be provided through prisons, but it's obviously not then.
Well, it is kind of. I mean, it's probation officers can facilitate it, but the unit that probation have that do this only has 4 people working in it, and they're also responsible for liaising with victims on all sorts of other things. I also mentioned that there's, I think, 5 main charities that work in this area, and they take referrals from the courts in different counties. But like some of those would only have 1 member of staff. So even though we've seen and I'm estimating here, let's say we've seen like a 50% investment in this in the last few years, because it is something that the government has said in the program for government that they're going to roll out. That's still only going from like, you know, eight or nine people working on this professionally to maybe 15 or so in recent years. So it's still not really available.
Is there anything that's off limits? Is there anything, Ian, that you can't, when you're sitting down with your attacker, that you can't ask them? Or is it just all bets are off?
In terms of what they're allowed to discuss, you mean?
Yeah, in the kind of questions that you might want to ask them about, why me? Why did you do this to me? How did it start? When did it? You know, is there anything you can't ask?
Yeah, difficult to say. I mean, that all comes in part of the preparation. So the facilitator would meet both parties in advance, often several times over a long period of time, and it would all be ironed out. So, I mean, I suppose you could have a situation where someone has a particular question and maybe the other person in the preparation says that they don't want to answer that. And then maybe you might have a situation where the person then doesn't ask that when they meet them. But I mean, in principle, it's meant to be very flexible. It's meant to be about trying to establish what the needs of the victim are and seeing, you know, the extent to which the offender is in a position to meet those.
And I'm curious, do victims or survivors typically, is there a benefit to them of going through this?
Yeah. So there's lots of research from other countries, including countries, as I say, that do this a lot more often. And for victims of crime, we look at two major areas of benefit. The first one is that victims find this much more satisfying than the court process. So victim satisfaction with restorative justice usually is between 85 to 95%. Victim satisfaction with courts can hover around 20 or 30%, depending on the study. So victims get it, you know, it's the only time that they can have their say, that they can talk about what's important to them on their own terms and have a say in the design of the process. And victims find that very satisfying. The other area then is around, does it help victims to recover from crime? So there have been studies looking at restorative justice with quite serious crime, where they're looking at, does it help to reduce post-traumatic stress symptoms like fear, like anger, the ability to move on and so forth. And again, restorative justice has been found to have a significant effect on that, a significant positive effect.
Do you know, I've been thinking about it because it's been on my mind, Ian, since I know we're just talking about this today in the context of Sophia Murphy's story, you know, and it's been on my mind, and we've been chatting about it here in the office over the last couple of days, like everything says she had gone through, and she talked, and we played a short little piece there of that interview with us on Wednesday talking about the fact that she has engaged, you know, with her attacker in the Restorative Justice Programme on two occasions. She has sat down and asked questions, and it has just struck me in thinking about this, like it has to be such a brave thing to do.
I suppose it's very difficult to predict whether a given person in a given situation would want to do it. Like, one of the things I always do when I'm talking about restorative justice, because I teach this to students and I talk about it with professionals and the public, and it's interesting to think about people's very different motivations. Like, you could be in a situation where something could happen to you and you absolutely don't want to talk to them at all, and something else could happen to you, and because of the combination of circumstances and how you feel about it, there's really specific things you want to say, or there's questions you want to ask, or things you want to know about the person or the situation. So this is why it's important to, in my view, to provide everyone with the information and the opportunity to participate, because it's really quite unpredictable whether someone would want to do this.
Statute of limitation, is there a point in time at which, you know, is there an expiry date, I suppose, Ian, on when you can do this?
Well, I mean, in principle, no. In practice, it depends on what the capacity is of the service that delivers it, right? So I don't know if, you know, like, say, for example, that you're a victim of a relatively serious crime and the person left prison many, many years ago, and you call probation to try and organize this, they might not be able to contact that person. So, I mean, that could be a barrier. But, I mean, in practice, or I should say in principle, there's absolutely no reason why it shouldn't be permitted and enabled. Like, that service should exist so that if someone wants to do this many years later, and you also could have a case where someone has been the victim of a crime, and maybe for any number of reasons, that person doesn't get prosecuted and never gets sentenced. And maybe that's not even what you want out of it, but there's still things that you want to say or questions you want to ask. That could be shortly after the thing has happened. It could be many years later. These are all things which a national comprehensive restorative justice policy and program could enable.
A listener question in here for you today in 087 1400 106 is the number. Does it have to be a sentence of a particular, you know, or certain length of time? Can this operate with more minor crimes?
It can. So, you know, when it's a case where the Garda youth diversion worker uses restorative justice where a child receives a caution, like that could be like two young kids have a fight. It could be that a kid steals something from someone or damages property. It could also be stuff that's much more serious as well. And I suppose the same is true for adults, like the kind of cases, you know, obviously in Sophia's case and the kind of things where probation would facilitate the victim to go into prison, that might be on the more serious end. But the cases where the judge refers the offender to restorative justice in between conviction and sentencing, like a lot of the cases that we look at there could be very minor indeed, or, you know, or at the lower end, I suppose, you know, shoplifting, assaults, even things like drug possession.
For anybody listening today that has been the victim of a crime that maybe was never offered or told about the restorative justice process and, you know, their perpetrator has been convicted and is serving a sentence for that particular crime, where can people, who do they get in touch with if they'd now like to engage with this, Ian?
Yeah, so there's information on the Citizens Information website, which is quite up to date in terms of listing the charities and what counties they work in and so on. But for people who the offender is or perhaps was recently on a community sentence or a prison sentence, the primary contact would be the restorative justice unit in the probation service, which can be reached at restorative@probation.ie.
Dr. Ian Marder, Associate Professor in Criminology at the School of Law and Criminology in Maynooth University. Ian, thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live today. I find that absolutely fascinating. And like the idea of when you might sit down with your attacker and discuss what happened and how it happened and why you, I just think it must be such a difficult decision to make. The email, if you want to share your experiences with us, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.